Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
Sports and Politics. It's Mr. FSP. I'm riding so low like Jason Derulo. Bad reference. Anyway, welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. On today's show, we will cover Ohio State versus Kansas, Louisville versus Kentucky. We'll also talk about Dwight Howard and Jamar Nelson's, call it Huddlegate. That's what the main term is going around now, Huddlegate. And what's really going on with the Saints and Bill Parcells and the Rooney Rule. Is it trying to be circumvented or, you know, we'll talk about it. Don't want to get into a black and white issue, but it has something to do with it, so we'll talk about that. Also, do you agree or disagree with Donovan McNabb's point of view on RG3, Robert Griffin III, going to the Redskins and not fitting in with Mike Shanahan's game plan? I said it last week on this show. I don't think it'll work under Shanahan and RG3 unless they cater to his style. We'll talk about Donovan's comments and hopefully we'll get some dialogue going on between you and me, and we'll see what you guys think about that. Also, there's a big event happening tomorrow. It's April Fool's Day, matter of fact, and I guess this is perfect because Mike Tyson is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. No, not the Boxing Hall of Fame, but Wrestling Hall of Fame. WWE Worldwide Entertainment will be inducting Mike Tyson tonight, actually. It's Saturday night. Into the Hall of Fame, into their Hall of Fame. Now, Mike Tyson was a part of the Attitude Era in WWE, which was the 90s, pretty much, early 90s, early 2000s. Was he a big part? No, not in my opinion. But we'll talk about it, and hopefully we'll get some feedback on what you think. Even if you follow wrestling or not, you know, this is supposedly the world's toughest man, baddest man on the planet, getting inducted into a wrestling Hall of Fame before the actual boxing Hall of Fame. And I got some friends, or I got a couple associates that are down in Miami right now, Mike Pierman, a.k.a. Mike Knox, was having a ball at WrestleMania, and hopefully he'll call in from his touring down there. We'll see what happens. Well, if you got an iPhone, you know what that is. That's my iPhone going off in the background. Kind of crazy, but it is what it is. So, that was a shocker. Didn't expect that to happen. But anyway, we got a couple things we're going to talk about, so let's get right into it. And if you want to call in and be a part of the conversation, you can dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. And I want to talk real quick about Huddlegate, if you want to call it that. Dwight Howard, a couple days ago, he and Jamar Miller were on the bench, and it was in a blowout game. The Magic were getting blown out, and Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson were on the side of a huddle. It was like towards the end of the game. Everybody else on the team, coaches and all, were all huddled up. Stan Van Gundy and all those guys were over there talking. And Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson were on the side, nowhere within the vicinity of the huddle. Now, I'm not trying to cause controversy. I mean, a lot of people have already stated how they feel about, you know, that, you know, seeing as though Dwight Howard, before the season started and towards the end of last year, stated that he wanted out. He wanted out of Orlando. He wanted to be a New Jersey Net with Williams, and the Magic didn't oblige. And then the Magic decided, we'll give you whatever you want, and, you know, as long as you stay. And then Dwight recanted his saying he wants to leave and says he wants to stay and try to get get Orlando deep into the playoffs and get a championship and all these other things. Now, I know and you know that that's some crap. But let's hear from the man himself about this huddle situation.
I think everybody's just blowing it out of proportion. I mean, me and Jameer was out the huddle, and we were discussing, you know, what we needed to do as leaders of the team, you know, for the rest of the season and going into the postseason. It wasn't like we was trying to stay away from everybody else, but we needed to get away and talk, you know, and that was the only time to where, you know, me and him was together.
Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's some Washington, D.C. spin there. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I know when I hear BS, okay? If he's your teammate and it's towards the end of the game, in a private setting, in a closer private setting would be the locker room. You guys can hold that conversation in the locker room. The game was nationally televised, so, of course, the big star and the supposed leader at point guard decide not to be a part of the huddle. At the end of a game, okay, you're getting blown out, but does that mean you separate yourselves from everyone else who's trying to talk over the game plan, even though, again, it's in a blowout game towards the end of the game? Do you sit at the end of the bench and talk about what you need to do as a leader on the team? Or do you get in the huddle, hear what the coach has to say, whatever, again, you're losing and you're going to lose, and then, like, during a break, when you get a whistle or whatever, you get the five guys on the court with you and talk about a little bit of leadership stuff there and take that into the locker room. It's just me. I'm not a professional NBA player, have never played professionally in the NBA. Matter of fact, I'm not that good. I'm probably one of the only black men in the world that isn't that good at basketball. Stereotype there. But leadership is something I'm really good at. And there's certain things that you can do and say to motivate people and demonstrate that you are trying to lead them. What happened on the sideline of the Orlando Magic was not one of them. It was one of, well, you know what? I'm frustrated. I'm tired. I don't want to lose. I'm tired of being in this situation. Now, that's what I got from it. I don't think that Dwight or Jameer saw that, you know, because from their standpoint, according to Dwight, they're discussing strategy and how to lead this team into the playoffs. I don't know. I know that big deals are made on the golf course, and they're made in other places, but not at the end of a blowout game. Just my opinion. I'd love to hear what you guys got to think. Again, if you want to call in and chime in, the number is 347-637-3220. I personally feel as though we'll take the Miami Heat for argument's sake, because everybody wants to jump on LeBron and all that. In the championship games last year in the NBA, you saw you saw Dwayne Wade pound on LeBron's chest at the end in the fourth quarter of one of the crucial games, saying, "You got to step up." Now, that will be motivating and leading that one individual, because that one individual is supposed to be such a great player and is supposed to be the heaven sent, you know, the trio of Bosh and LeBron and Wade. Okay, that was public. And everybody said that's what Wade needed to do, because even though LeBron is the bigger name, Dwayne Wade is actually the leader of the team. So when you look at Dwight Howard in this situation, you're in a blowout game, you're losing, I got you. But is that true leadership and being able to motivate folks just standing there or sitting there talking to somebody? Or is it better to go out and just show them, okay, I'm giving up 110% every game, win or lose, and half you guys are, you know, just here for a paycheck. I'll even go the NFL route with Cam Newton. Cam Newton did an interview with ESPN, I believe it was the magazine, and it was a video interview as well, where he said he wants guys to get to his level. Now, Cam Newton was a rookie. A rookie. But Cam Newton also ran for 15 touchdowns. He threw for, I believe, 20 more, or he closed 17, something like that. And he wanted the players on his team to step up to his level. He showed more leadership as a rookie than Dwight Howard did in that one game. We got a call from 240 on the line. I believe it's my cousin, Mikal, so let me bring him on. Caller from the 240. Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. Please state your name.
Hi, who?
You know what? Stop with the RG3. Stop with the RG3. We're going to get into that, too. We're going to get into that because I want to know what you think about Donovan McNabb's comments, because he essentially said what I said.
Donovan's lunching.
But right now, I'm talking about the Dwight Howard situation, whereas I don't know if you are familiar with the situation where early in the week the Magic was getting blown out by, I think it was the Mavericks, and Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson sat on the end of the bench while the rest of the team was in a big huddle. Now, the game was pretty much over, and it was a blowout, not in Orlando's favor. So, you know, Dwight's comments were that was the only time he and Jameer had time to discuss, you know, preparing the team and getting ready for the playoffs and steering the team in the right direction. Now, I can test it wasn't. So are you familiar with the situation, first of all? And if not, I can play the sound bite, and you can give me some comments off of that.
Go ahead and play the sound bite. This is the first time I'm hearing about it.
All right.
I think everybody's just blowing it out of proportion. I mean, me and Jameer was out the huddle, and we were discussing, you know, what we needed to do as leaders of the team, you know, for the rest of the season and going into the postseason. It wasn't like we was trying to stay away from everybody else, but we needed to get away and talk, you know, and that was the only time to where, you know, me and him was together.
Do you buy that, or is it just straight BS? I say it's BS, because if that's the case, you can do that in the locker room, or you can do that on the court with the five guys on the court at the time. But I just want to know what you think.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, basketball players, this generation has been doing this for quite some time now. You know, when it's a blowout, it tends to be some type of chill-out period and talking and, you know, laughing or doing other things because, you know, the game's pretty much over or what have you. But I don't know what that conversation was about. And what were their productions like this year?
Orlando is currently sitting at the last place for the playoffs, and they've been blown out by 25 points three times already, and they're in the playoffs. Only the worst teams in the league have been blown about 25 points or more this year. But the Wizards, Orlando, and I forget the other team, I think it's the Raptors, have been blown out three times by 25 points or more. But only Orlando is in the playoffs. And, you know, it's a whole situation of if you're going to discuss leadership or if you're going to demonstrate, would you, as a player, would you rather have somebody that's on your team that professes to be a leader be on the court leading or and in the huddle showing that you're sold in or you're into what the coach is saying, or you don't said that he is sitting at the end of the bench while you and the rest of the team is in a huddle, even though the game is a blowout. I mean, as a player, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you should be in on the ship when it is going down, no matter what, because you know you're gonna be sitting at the top of it when it's cruising and you know cruising to the top. And when it's going down, yeah, you need to be in there with it. So, yeah, I kind of agree. And it does show, you know, some discipline issues with, you know, with the whole team together, you know, and them having all buy-in. So, yeah, I mean, I could kind of get why, yeah, they're not at, you know, either a 3 or 4 or something like that. And yeah, and you get blowouts like that. It's for a reason. It's for a reason. So,
okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, that was my point. That's why I brought it up, because I felt so. Dwight Howard, the Magic had pretty much called his bluff. They're saying they're giving him everything he wants as long as he stays, and you know he changed his mind. He took it out the paper and said, "Look, I'm gonna stay here. And I'm committed to this team winning a championship and going far in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah." But his actions sometimes doesn't dictate that, in my opinion. But I digress.
I just think, you know what, I just think he's, you know, he's young-minded. He's a young,
no.
You know, he's a young cat trying to get his, trying to feel his way around. And, you know, but unfortunately, you got a lot of that going on in the NBA, a lot of that, you know. But I think that, you know, he has all the tools to do it. I don't think he's just – I don't think he's using it effectively. And I can say that for a lot of NBA players right now.
But he's got Patrick Ewing as somebody to guide him. But, you know, we'll see what happens towards the playoffs. If you know, they're losing to the 76ers or whoever the number one seed is, Chicago or whoever – in the playoffs, and see how his reactions are. We'll see then. But let's move on to something else that's kind of funny to me, might not be to others. Mike Tyson's going to the Hall of Fame. Did you know that, Mike?
Yeah.
He's going to WrestleMania, and he's going to be inducted in the WWE's Hall of Fame, not the Boxing Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening tonight. My thoughts are, first of all, I watch wrestling, and I understand it's entertainment, but the physicality of it is real. It's scripted, but it's you know, the physicality of it is real. Mike Tyson did maybe 2 or 3 things during the Attitude Era when you had Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and all these other people being badasses, and he's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame in the WWE. My question is, why hasn't he been inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame before he gets inducted into a Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame? Why do you think that? He's been retired long enough.
I have no idea. I have no idea. No idea. But I know that, you know, you and I, we go back and forth about the wrestling thing because, you know, I think it's a big joke. But,
yeah.
I think that, you know, what wrestling is doing, I mean, I guess with this WrestleMania, you know, of course they're doing a publicity thing. And I think it's good for Mike, because Mike has been he's been trying to keep the public eye for, you know, for the past couple of years. He's got the little pigeon show, Animal Planet. He's got
Vegas
venue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's been doing. So I think this is very good for him. I really do. You know, as far as boxing, you know, that sport, everything about it is shady, you know. So I mean, I don't understand why they haven't done it for him, but I just hope the best for Mike, you know, because he's been screwed over a lot. And he screwed up a lot.
This is true. Let me get the number out here because I see some people in the chat room. We want to get them in on this. If you want to call in and talk about this, the number is 347 347- 347-3220. Again, the number is 347-637-3220. Now, my thoughts on it pretty much are that Mike Tyson had did a lot of things in his career and in his life. You know, he admitted he only did the hangover so he could get money for drugs. And later on, after the first hangover, his daughter dies on his treadmill. She gets strangled or something like that on the treadmill. And, you know, Mike is trying to get his life back together. He lost a lot of money because of bad investments with Don King and just things he did wrong. But the WWE and Vince McMahon capitalized on his marketability during these times of his life and brought him in. And, you know, of course, that took wrestling to fans such as yourself of boxing. I know you're not a wrestling fan, but at the same time, when you take people like Ken Shamrock, who was actually in the UFC before he joined the WWF at the time, and bring them into your sport, you pretty much spread the brand. But I'm thinking because of these gimmicks, and I'm calling them gimmicks, that the WWE has done with some of these real live sport athletes, it diminishes their value in their actual sport.
Oh, and, dude, that's been diminished a long time ago.
Well, what I'm saying is like...
No,
because when Ken Shamrock left UFC and he joined the WWE, he was, you know, one of the baddest men on the planet. He had to learn the catch-as-catch-can, which is react to what happens to you without actually hurting your opponent. And then when he left the WWE, he went back to real fighting, which was mixed martial arts, in the UFC. And he was never taken really seriously again. He had one or two good fights in the, I believe, 5 to 6 years after he left WWE and became a real fighter again, similar to Brock Lesnar. Now, people are saying Brock Lesnar is going to show up tonight or tomorrow at WrestleMania. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But I think that Mike Tyson, he could never go back and be taken seriously because of all of the things that he's done in his life, and the WWE is one of them. I mean, personally, I'm glad he's going to the Hall of Fame in the WWE, but I would think that he would go to the Hall of Fame in boxing first before his accomplishments in the ring. Do you think his out-of-the-ring antics and things of that nature is the reason why he's not already in the Hall of Fame?
No, I just think that they're just being they're just dragging their feet because they're silly. I really think that. I mean, because you've got boxers that's in the Hall of Fame with a whole lot of questionable character. You know what I mean? Way more questionable character than Mike Tyson. It just so happens that all of his antics were, you know, highlighted in this society's boom in the media. You know what I mean? And just the infatuation that we have with so many things, you know, concerning the media. I mean, everything is, you know, magnified to the umpteenth degree. Secondly, you know, Mike, you know, I don't think that it takes away from Mike. I mean, because Mike now is a general entertainer. You know, I think he's gone into that realm now. I mean, it really doesn't matter. I mean, Mike can show up at WrestleMania and drawing fans and bring people in just to see what's going on, and he can charge for that. I don't see a problem with that. I mean, because, you know, he's basically doing that as much now. I mean, you know, doing cameos in movies, doing the Vegas thing. No, I have I would look forward to seeing Mike more so than I would look forward to see some of these wrestlers. I mean, maybe, you know, the ones that have, you know, transitioned into, you know, people like The Rock and, you know, some of the things that Cena is doing, you know, as far as movies and stuff, and, you know, this mega clash that they about to have at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I really think that, especially with The Rock, I really respect what he has done. You know, I think he's really bridged that subtle divide. It's a very subtle divide now between the competition athlete and that athlete's notoriety to the general entertainment type of athlete. You know what I mean? And I think he's bridged that well, and I think he's done very well. I think he is much more of the blueprint of how it should be done now.
Well, he says he wants to be nominated for an Emmy, and he wants to win an Emmy. So we'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, we'll see. He'll definitely go into the Hall of Fame of wrestling someday. But I just thought it was interesting that Mike Tyson was going into the Wrestling Hall of Fame before the Boxing Hall of Fame. But I didn't want to spend too much time on it because it was just an oddity. I thought it was interesting. Let's get to something a little more interesting. Now, I think I got Jerry Taylor on the line. Hold on, Mike. I think I got the ATM on the line. Caller from the 732, please state your name. Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics.
It is the master is in the house.
You made it from your move, Mr. Secluded Man.
Only for a short time because I got a lull here. I'm waiting for my movers to come here so they can pick up the heavy stuff and put it in the truck. So I got a little bit of talk, so I figured I'd harass you a little bit.
Jerry.
I want winners.
Jerry.
What's up?
Hi, A. Jerry.
What's up?
Whatever. This ain't no daggone Budweiser commercial. Hey, we're about to move from the Mike Tyson topic. We're going to move right into I want to get into the Saints and the NFL stuff and Donovan McNabb's comments, but I'm going to leave it up to you since you don't got that much time, Jerry. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about the Final Four?
Let me talk about the slap in the face the Saints are continually trying to do to Roger Goodell.
All right, well, let's go on now. I got a couple sound bites from that. So we're going to talk about the Saints and what's going on. I have three sound bites from Adam Schefter here, okay? Adam Schefter is reporting on the appeal that's supposed to be going on, and he's also talking about there's a lack of evidence for some of these players to get them punished. So let's hear these sound bites, and I'll let you discuss them, all right? First one, Adam Schefter talking about the lack of evidence to implicate certain players in the NFL.
You're hearing D. Smith express some skepticism about the evidence that the league has right now. And right now, he has not seen the evidence for these players to give the league the recommendation that Roger Goodell was hoping to have by today. The NFLPA did not do that. And so next week, the NFLPA and the NFL are expected to speak extensively about what is going to happen here, what the NFLPA thinks is fair in this particular case.
So the issue isn't whether they're going to be punished or not. It's, you know, whether or not or what type of punishment they're going to get and what's fair punishment for players such as Jonathan Vilma. Jonathan Vilma already knows he's going to get fine, suspended, whatever the case may be, but, you know, what will it be? Here's Adam Schefter again on the preponderance of evidence.
Right now, the NFLPA says it has not seen sufficient evidence to make a strong recommendation to the NFL and Roger Goodell about what the discipline should be for the players involved. Those discussions will intensify next week, and we should have everything wrapped up, you'd think, at some point next week later on.
So you've got the NFLPA says you can punish them, but I'm not sure about the evidence you have on them. So let's dig a little deeper. And this is a soundbite of Adam Schefter talking about how the Saints are furthering their time to find a new coach or to let Sean Payton stay on board as the head coach until the appeal is seen and heard.
You would think that
Commissioner Goodell could make a decision next week. So when Sean Payton's suspension kicks in on Sunday, April 1st, right now it's tolled, T-O-L-L-E-D. It will not take hold because it is under appeal. And as long as it's under appeal, the suspension does not kick into effect. But it will kick into effect from the moment that Commissioner Goodell makes his ruling on the appeal.
So it works pretty much like a player suspension. So a player can stay playing and active, receive a game check and stuff like that until the suspension actually takes place. Case in point, the Williams brothers in Minnesota, or not brothers, but the Williams boys in Minnesota, they played two seasons while their suspensions were getting appealed in federal court and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. then one retired after the verdict came out. So he didn't get touched at all. So, Jerry, talk to me about the two situations, the evidence for the players and the appeal process, which is going to push along Sean Payton at least maybe to – well, it's going to go to the draft if Goodell doesn't get a judgment in before the draft.
Well, I thought they had multiple scabs of paper that were implicating or pretty much indicting all these guys. Now you tell me that they don't have any evidence? That's crazy. They don't have any evidence. They don't have a case. On the other thing,
they've got evidence. It's just the evidence is shaky. It's circumstantial. Yeah. That's what Schefter's saying. The NFLPA is saying.
Wow. And the other thing, I didn't know Sean Payton was appealing anything.
He appealed it at 4:55 or something like that Friday, just before the close of business in the NFL.
Oh, see, I didn't know that because I've been out of the loop because I've been doing my thing here. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, everybody, I guess, has a chance to appeal it. It's just a matter of you have to wait and see what happens. I mean, but the other thing is, and I can't talk too much longer. I think it's a slap in the face that they're trying to even get Bill Parcells to coach the Saints when the commissioner slaps a fine, which is supposed to penalize the Saints. The Saints are trying to circumvent that to get a coach comparable, if not better, than Sean Payton. I mean, that's just another slap in the face to the commission. I can't believe they're doing that.
Well, they're trying to circumvent it. Now, what they're trying to circumvent, I know you got to go at some point, so just let me know, interrupt me when you got to.
Right.
Because the Rooney Rule says that any coach that is not on your current staff that you want to hire as a head coach, you have to at least interview a minority. And what Herm Edwards said on ESPN was that he knows of certain coaches that were called and asked would they be interested in at least coming in to have a sit-down interview with them.
Right.
I don't want to call names, but maybe Denny Green is one of them, and said the coach said no, but in the paper the next day it says that team interviewed ex-coach, which took care of the Rooney Rule. Now, the way the Saints are trying to do it is they're trying to somehow make Bill Parcells, if he decides to take the job, an executive in the organization. Therefore, they don't need to interview anybody. He can just step in and, you know, oversee the offense and defense, but let Joe Vitt, once he comes in after his six-game suspension, take total control. But Spagnuolo would have game day calls. So that's what they're talking about.
I'm completely, when they told me that Parcells was getting talked to, and seriously, that he's they're friends, and if a friend asked me to coach it, I would do it. That's like circumventing the commissioner. That's just like a slap in the face of the commissioner. So I mean, I can't believe that they would have the nerve after everything that they've gone through and everything that happened, fines and suspensions that have to do with the organization, that they would have the gall to do that. That's crazy.
What do you mean? I'm confused. I'm confused about what the gall is. I mean, because in my opinion, the gall came from Goodell. I mean, because this whole thing, the whole bounty thing is was circumstantial, and I said that in the beginning.
Yeah, you did
say that in the beginning. It's much to do about nothing. I wish you. I wish you could stay, dude. Damn, I wish you could stay.
because I'm gonna take Jerry's mantle on it because I see we have a total difference of opinion here. But let me
we got a total difference of opinion. And you know, Goodell is really getting on my nerves with this. I mean, he's really running this NFL to the ground. Running it to the ground. Yes.
Hold on, Michael. If you want to get in on this conversation, ladies and gentlemen, because I can see it's going to be heated, you can dial 347-637-3220. Again, the number is 347-637-3220. Because my cousin and I, we're going to go back and forth on this, even without Jerry. I can see that now. Hopefully we get to Donovan McNabb and we get to the Final Four, because I got to get to that. But this is going to take a minute.
I gotta go.
All right, Jay.
Guys in front of me, I gotta go.
All right, Jay.
All right, talk to you guys later. That didn't even sound right. You know that, right?
What?
He was like, I got guys in front of me, I gotta go.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, boy.
I got you now. Okay.
Bye.
Bye, Jerry. All right, Mike, go ahead with your thoughts, because I totally disagree with what you said, but
I mean,
I'd like to get your thoughts out.
I think Roger Goodell has a lot of this power has really gone in his head. And I'm going across the board, and I'm just sick of this, and this is really much to do about nothing. I mean, one, I was upset about the how he tried to, the thing that he did with Aaron Pryor. I thought that was ridiculous. This whole bounty gate thing. You've got maybe one or two guys that may have said a couple of things. Vilma probably did put that money out on the table, but you went after the head coach and, you know, put him out indefinitely. And, I mean, I'm talking about Greg Williams indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And you're using that as leverage to come back at the Redskins, because the Redskins are going to sue you. They're going to sue you, and they're going to win. You know,
now,
this stuff is just he is ridiculous. He needs to go.
Can I jump in? All right, firstly, I haven't heard much about the Redskins situation, so you can talk about that in a minute. But as far as why he's doing what he's doing, an investigation came up some time ago, about 3 years ago, and the NFL looked into it and asked questions of Sean Payton, of Greg Williams, of certain players, and people were denying it. They were saying, no, it isn't there, it isn't there. So they let it lie. They left it alone. Then most recently, someone brought up some more allegations. So then Goodell had to put his team together and say, okay, look, well, it came back up. Let's see what this is about. So he did his due diligence, found out that there was some validity to the accusations. Then you had players actually step up and say, yes, this went on, that went on. Yes, he said do this, that, and the third, but it's mostly a player thing.
Are you recanting the whole story?
No. Just listen to what I'm saying. Listen to what I'm saying now. No, I'm not recanting, because that means I'm taking it back. I'm not taking nothing back. But the bottom line was that Sean Payton, Greg Williams, and several of the officials in the Saints organization lied to the commissioner the first time. Okay? So then the commissioner said, okay, you lied to me. Got you. Now I'm giving out another opportunity to come clean and tell the truth. So then they lied to him again. Then the commissioner said, okay, I got this evidence, that evidence. So he called Sean Payton and Greg Williams to his office, just like a principal, And they lie to him to his face because he shows them the evidence, whatever evidence he has, to them.
My God.
And then they're like, okay, well, you know, this isn't exactly what it looks like, but, okay, I can see where you're getting your ideas from. So then Goodell says, look, you lied to me 2-3 times, and now you got to pay. So he suspends Greg Williams indefinitely, effective immediately. Then he suspends Sean Payton because he's the head coach, and he came to the office and said, well, I didn't know this was going on, and no, this isn't going on. But then when I show you, it's like a kid getting caught on videotape. Nah, I didn't take the cookie. What does that videotape show me? Okay, well, I might have taken the cookie. So then Sean Payton has to say, well, you know what? Okay, I'll be a man. I'll take it. And then at the 11th hour and 55 minutes, to be exact, Sean Payton says, you know what? I'm going to fight it now because I still want the organization to be able to do this, that, and the third. So I don't know what penalty that Roger Goodell is giving the Skins over this. I know he's penalizing the Skins and the Cowboys over the salary cap thing, but I don't know about this.
He's penalizing the Redskins and Cowboys over the cap thing. And what's happening is, you know, because the Redskins and the Cowboys are, you know, gearing up to sue, he still has an open investigation on the Redskins as far as the bounty is concerned. He's holding it over their head, so it's like, okay, look, you're gonna take this hit on this $36 million, or I'm gonna come back and investigate you some more with this bounty gate. And I don't know why you don't see it. The thing that pisses me off about it is you can go through all of the teams in the NFL and do the same thing
that you're doing
with the Saints. And each and every one of those organizations would probably something like this would go on. So my thing was like, look, dude, this is football. It's football. This is what they do. How are you now going to play this ticky-tack trivialization going back and forth and back and forth and this and that? No, man. No, no, no. You're destroying the brand. He's destroying the brand. And I'm sorry
to tell
you that.
He might, in your eyes, he might be destroying the brand, but remember, part of the NFLPA and the players' fight during the summer was for health care and safety measures for players. So
really?
Listen, why don't you?
Well, if that's the case, then why don't they? Why don't they? Why are some of the Redskins, Mark Rippon and a couple of other guys, suing the NFL for the health care of the players that's retired?
I got you. Because that was the one part that they didn't work out. They worked out a lot of different things for current players, and they worked out a small portion for former players. But the main issue, or supposedly the main issue of the lockout, was that the players wanted to keep a certain percentage of money, and they wanted better health care and things for the current players and some of the former players as far as concussions, as far as injuries and going to the hospital, because after 2 or 3 years after being out the league, your benefits run out. So this protects the players, right?
Really?
What I'm saying is this gives him or the NFL, this situation, the bounty gate gives the NFL a stronger leverage on saying, well, look, you're telling me you want me and the rest of the NFL to set up, you know, funds and stuff like that to protect players after they play, but yet we have an organization or teams and players who are putting their own money on the table to hurt other players to get certain players out of the game so it'll make it easier for their team to win a game. So you're telling me, and I'm the commissioner now, I'm playing that role, that you want me to protect you and him, but you are putting up $10,000 of your own money to the person that injures this guy? Because Kurt Warner got a concussion on that one big hit that took him out of that game versus New Orleans, and that was one of the, I think that was the game, that was one of the other games that Vilma put money up, because he put money on Brett Favre and Kurt Warner, and I think I believe it was a lineman that collected the money on Kurt Warner, and then you got somebody on tape saying, okay, of a game on the sideline saying, where's my money? I took him out. Where's my money? I took him out. So you're, and I'm the commissioner here, and I got all this, but yet the players are the ones saying, no, you need to give us more protection. You need to take care of us. But certain players on teams, not all teams.
They're not, hold on, but Vic, they're not looking for protection on the field.
I know that.
They're looking for protection as far as after playing the game, being a warrior, and being in the game.
I got that, Mike, but when you give Kurt Warner a concussion, and he's already had like several of them, but you give him the last one that knocks him out of the game and pretty much ends his career, that, if you're telling me that isn't part of taking care of him afterwards? Because not saying he wouldn't have got a concussion.
No,
you know,
all I'm saying is that protects the NFL from being able to market a team with a franchise quarterback.
Let me ask you this though. All right. Greg Williams was here when LeVar Arrington was with the Skins, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there was a bounty on Troy Aikman. I'm not saying that because I don't know. But let's say there was.
You know, he wasn't the defensive coordinator when he did that to Troy Aikman. You know that, right? Go ahead.
Let's say he was Troy Aikman, known for having concussions, but that last hit put him out of professional football, and LeVar was already known as a big hitter. He was known as a heat-seeking missile regardless, okay? Let's say there was a bounty for that. Not saying that it was or if it wasn't, but does that make it right to, okay, put a hit out on Troy Aikman, even though you know that without Troy Aikman, the Cowboys are easier to beat? And Troy Aikman now suffers from, you know, memory loss and stuff like that, that the NFL now has to pay in the medical coverage for that. Not saying it wouldn't have been anybody else that did it to him or any other hit that would have did it to him, but that was the one that knocked him out of the game of football. Now the NFL has to make sure they have provisions to make sure that Troy Aikman is taken care of. So what I'm saying
and I disagree, because that is football.
I got
that
you.
That is football. And
I got
they
you.
And they need to take care of these guys, because they out here throwing their bodies out there every game, 16 games, and they want to take it to 18? No, man. Yes, they need to take care of them.
I'm not saying they don't need to take care of them. What I'm saying is that this type of situation with the bounty gives credence to what he was saying all along, what the NFL was saying all along. Yeah, we want to take care of these players, but when you got stuff like this going on.
No, that's a cop-out.
It could be, Mike, but when you have, and you said it's going on in all the NFL teams, which I agree with, because if it's me and I'm the D-backs and I know that I get like $100 for every interception I get, or I get $50 for
If you're a D-back and you play for the Oakland Raiders, you know that you're going to get, if you come out and you had like this, you known for knocking dudes out, guess what? You're going to get a better contract the next time you come around. So don't even try with this $100
$10.
That's petty.
No, I got that, but that's what the players were saying. That's what Sharper and all the former players that played under Greg Williams from Buffalo, D.C., and New Orleans were saying, that It wasn't Greg Williams doing it. It was the DBs that said, we got a pool of money that was from being late or fine, whatever fines we had, and we took this amount of money and gave it to X player if they had the biggest hit or made an interception. So that was the players covering for Williams. That's what they said. That's not a cop-out. That's not the thing what you're talking about. What you're talking about is a player playing for a contract.
That is
and I get
that, no, but
I
that is
it.
A cop-out. That is a cop-out. If you're going to stand behind the fact that these guys are building some type of camaraderie to play the game, to play the game the way it's supposed to be played and give the people what they want to see is hits, you know what I'm saying, and knockouts and stuff like that, and
yeah.
play the game, then that's a cop-out. You're going to stand behind that and not take care of them? Really?
I'm not
really?
Saying you're going to take care of them.
That's your leverage?
Right. I agree that they need to be taken care of. But what I'm saying to you is if you look at it from his side of the coin, if you look at it from the commissioner and the NFL side of the coin, this is what he's saying. Well, look, you want me to do this, NFLPA and players, but look what your own members are doing to each other. That's and I'm gonna take it to a racial
right.
thing here. I'm
right,
take it
that,
to
but see, but
thing.
That's what, but see, what I'm saying is, if you say that, if you're making that argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you stating now that I should not be paying as much, or
no,
you
no,
guys
no.
should you got or
no, no, no.
I give you the leverage to just to stop you from doing this and doing that,
no,
and,
no, no.
And really destroying the brand.
What I think, if it were me, and I'm saying if Victor was the commissioner of the NFL, I would actually take that stance because it would be like, okay, well, look, you lobbied me to do this, but look what your own players are doing to each other. And we've got proof of it. We've got video. We've got audio. We've got players actually saying this is what we did and what,
okay,
you
so
know,
what
they did.
What would be a remedy to it? What would be a remedy to it?
And,
you want to take off? You want to stop the contact? You want to take off the helmet?
No.
You want to take off the shoulder pads?
No. My remedy is this. This is Victor's remedy. Police yourselves before I police you. Because, okay, we brought it to the light. We're going to make an example of New Orleans organization. And, I mean, it's just like any other mafia or government.
Thank you for putting that out there. Because he's acting is he's acting very overreaching like a mafia or a gangster. Go ahead, continue.
But what I'm saying is you police yourselves before I police you. Because then it becomes an issue of, look, you want me to take care of you? Well, you got to do something for yourself before I take care of you. I mean, that's just like with life. You don't want something. You keep begging somebody for something, but what are you doing to take care of yourself first? And that's I'm looking at it. But
no, I think he needs to protect the brand and protect the players. You know what I mean? And protect the game of football. And that
Mike,
is part of the game of football.
I agree with you 110%. But in order to protect the game of football, the football players need to protect each other. Yeah, it's a game. It's a very violent game. And, yes, you got big hitters like Brian Dawkins, like Lynch was, like Atwater was, like
Sean Taylor.
Sean Taylor was, who played under Greg Williams. Okay?
Mm-hmm. And
Sean
we love Taylor's
them. Passed away.
And we love
them. Exactly, because he brought the boom every time. He played it hard. But at the same time, how many concussions did Sean Taylor have? You know,
he didn't have
how many? Yes, no. Oh, that's where you're wrong, brother. That's where you're wrong. Sean Taylor had three concussions. Three concussions.
So
that took him out
okay,
of game.
So to remedy that, let's just take off the pads. Let's take off the helmets and just put flags on the side of the and let's play flag football.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, when you're playing within the confines of the rules, it's okay. Yeah, but when you start putting money on the table to take out a certain player, that's saying, okay, look, I'm gonna play within the rules, but I'm gonna try to hurt this person just so I can get a tactical advantage. Now I know we got Black on the line, so I'm gonna bring Black in because he's been listening for the last like 5 minutes. I want to get his thoughts on it. So Black, go ahead and talk to us about what you think.
Goodell.
Well, we know you think he's the hammer, so you don't like him, but go ahead.
Yes, the hammer enacted his laws. Like I was telling you guys last week, you thought bounties could go free and random in the NFL. No way, man. No way at all.
Okay, well, what are your thoughts on, you know, him saying, okay, look, let's make an example of the Saints so that everybody else polices themselves? Or do you think that it's just him overreaching and you know, playing, well, he is the president of the NFL pretty much. But
a non-profit organization. Mm-hmm.
I got that. Well, no. NFL is a for-profit organization.
No, NFL is a non-profit. You need to look it up.
No, they are. We'll discuss that later. We'll discuss
mm-hmm.
it. But what do you think about the whole situation of him, I guess, or the Saints trying to circumvent the ruling that Roger Goodell put out there?
Roger Goodell is saying one of those classic sayings, you are going to learn today.
Okay.
They put out the warnings. They didn't heed the warnings. They knew they were looking into this bounty stuff. There's somebody that needs to be made an example of, and that happened to be the New Orleans Saints.
But do you think it was right for him to do that?
I have to agree with Goodell on this one.
So you do agree with him?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, that's 2-1, 3-1, because ATM was on the line, but he had to go. But hey, you know, each to each his own. You know, personally, me, and I said this when Mike was asking me, you know, if it were me, I think he was doing the right thing. You police yourselves before I police you, because if I gotta police you, that means you have no self control, and if I gotta control you, then you know, so be it. That's the way I look at it.
But you're going to police and control off shady-ass evidence. That's
no.
The thing that's killing me. Your
no,
evidence
is
shady. It's been shady.
If you got
shady.
Players, if you got play, well, you know, that's what the NFLPA is saying, that some of the evidence
Slim,
is
you got,
circumstantial.
You got, Slim, you got players over here at the Redskins saying it ain't happened, but you got one dude that happened to be that happens to be in the media that wrote a whole piece saying that it happened. That it happened here.
But then after that, you had other players come out and say, yes, this took place. But then.
No, I'm talking. Yeah,
I know you're talking about
okay.
Matt Bowen, but then some of these players then said that Greg Williams didn't advocate it. But then you have Blotch. Greg Blotch, the former defensive line coach under Williams and former Redskins coach under Williams, who once Williams left, totally dismantled that whole thing. He said, no, we're not doing this. And he came out
that was,
on record.
Yeah, and that was the spin
and
that
said
they put out there.
And he
that's
said
a nice
that,
spin
that
they put out
coach.
There.
That was
you know,
a coach.
Because the Redskins was protecting themselves. That's the good spin that they put out there.
But Blotch mm-hmm. said it himself. So, I mean,
right.
how, and he's
that's
no longer
good spin
a Redskins
put out there.
He's no longer with the organization. So, I mean, he's... What he did was he said, look, I'm going to kill it right now. That is not happening anymore while I'm the defensive coach. And this is why I think that Greg Williams had 8 interviews with the Washington Redskins and did not get the job. I was upset about that at first, but now it makes sense. Because Daniel Snyder said, look, here's what I'm hearing. And if this is what I'm hearing and this is going on, I don't want no parts of it to affect my organization. So then he didn't let him. He let him go.
No, that wasn't it, Slim. It fits in a nice little bow for you, so you could believe that. But that's not what happened. Greg Williams wanted more control of the Washington Redskins.
I got that.
And that Dan Snyder was not willing to give.
I got you, but maybe this bounty thing was part of it too. But I agree with what you're saying.
Had nothing to do with it.
Well, since we're talking about the Redskins, let's get into this real quick before we get to the Final Four. Donovan McNabb came out recently on an interview and said exactly what I said last week, except he went in depth with it. The RG3 would not do well in DC under the Shanahans, and he went down the list of all the quarterbacks that Mike Shanahan has had since John Elway. and they all have losing records because none of them conformed to the system of the Shanahan's other than Jake Plummer. And then when Jake Plummer decided he didn't want to do it his way anymore, they traded him to Tampa, and Jake Plummer subsequently retired. He said Brian Griese didn't do that much better under the Shanahan regime, and Matt Schaub did okay, but he never won a championship. And then he talked about how Shanahan had all these different players, including himself, that didn't do well because they didn't conform. And I agree with Donovan that if RG3 comes to the Redskins and is forced to be in the same mold as what Kyle wants, he will not do well in D.C. So I want to get you two, I want to get your thoughts on what Donovan said and your thoughts on RG3 in the Shanahan system. And I know Michael had a strong opinion on this because we talked about it when we opened up. So go ahead, Mike. I'll let you go first.
I mean, I think Donovan has, you know, a lot of gall to be sitting up here talking about this. I mean, he's never won a championship himself. You know what I mean? When I think of him, I think of that Super Bowl. It's like 1 minute left to go, and he just strolling to the line of scrimmage like he had all day. So
that's because he threw his guts up, man.
Okay.
Besides that, what about his statement about RG3 in the Shanahan system? Do you think how do you feel about that statement?
I disagree with him. I disagree with him. Okay. He didn't buy in. You know what I mean? He didn't buy in, and he didn't want to do some of the things that they were trying to get him to do, which is why Grossman looked better in the system than he did, which was crazy. You know what I mean? It was real alarming to me. And then he had a chance to redeem himself, you know what I mean, when they traded him to Minnesota, and he went to Minnesota and just stunk up the joint. So his premise that, you know, RG3 would not be successful in Shanahan's offensive system is just ridiculous. It's ridiculous to me because he doesn't know. He doesn't know. He has no idea. I mean, because he wouldn't even run. He wouldn't even run the offense. I mean, he was coming out throwing 3 and 4 yard passes to people that are out 10 yards. The ball will bounce all the time. He was doing the same thing in Philadelphia. So no. I'm not feeling that. I think that this youngin will have a good chance to have a good career, a good season with the Washington Redskins next year. And I think that the Shanahan will work with him. They will, and his is the things that he can do will be an asset to them because they like to do a lot of rollout throws. They like to do, you know, the outside the tackle passes and stuff like that. They like to do that, and this youngin can do it. So he's going to be fine. I think he's just, spitting out sour grapes.
Okay. Black, what do you think?
McNabb is spitting out sour grapes, as your cousin said. He's a loser. He's always been a loser.
Oh, my God. All right. Is that all you got, Black?
No, let RG3 get the Washington first, because we still don't know if Indianapolis is going to pull the okie doke and grab RG3. So let him get the Washington first, and then we can see how he fits in the system. McNabb doesn't know how this is going to play out. McNabb didn't even possess the talent that RG3 had.
No, he don't.
Actually, yes, he did. When he first came out, he did.
No.
Remember?
No, he was not that dominant.
Donovan was a runner.
He was not that dominant at Syracuse.
No. Okay, listen. He and Marvin Harrison put up big numbers in Syracuse as far as throwing the ball and receiving, and Donovan ran a little bit. Maybe he's not as fast or as sleek as RG3, but they have a very similar skill set.
Nor is he as smart as RG3 either.
Well, I don't know, but that might be the case. But I think that Donovan, because he was the same type of athlete or labeled the same type of athlete that RG3 is, but RG3 is a little better, that he's speaking from experience. Now, personally, I would love to see a good quarterback's coach come in to the Redskins and coach this guy. And if Shanahan feels, or Kyle Shanahan feels as though his offense is that great, which is good for numbers, but not end zone numbers. I mean, I'm just telling you. Because in the AFC South, you weren't only team you really had to beat was Indianapolis. And they didn't do that much. That's the only team they really had to beat. And Houston had the weapons back then. So, you know, I'm not a believer in the Shanahan system. Let me put it that way. I think you should call that the shenanigans system.
Because it's full of shenanigans.
Well, shenanigans system, whatever.
I think
RG3 has a skill set that is very unique to the NFL, but it's becoming more apparent that that's the same skill set that will be coming to the NFL. That if Shanahan does not modify his offense a little bit or to cater to the skill set of the quarterback, whether it's Grossman, whether it's RG3 or whoever, that there's going to be a problem with whoever the quarterback is. That's why they re-signed Rex Grossman. I mean, I would have took anybody other than Rex Grossman. Anybody. I know Rex Grossman knows the offense. I know he knows the offense. I got that. But what that tells me is they're not going to start RG3 out the gate. I hope they do, but they're not.
Yeah, so I can give you my $20. But they not. So I want my $20.
No. They might change at some point, but I believe that RG3 should be the starter. But Rex Grossman, since he knows the system, and if RG3 doesn't buy into it fully or understand it fully, which I don't think will be a problem, then I'm going to do Rex.
But I don't think Rex is going to start five games. Andrew Luck is there with Rex Grossman. Who do you start, Andrew Luck or Rex Grossman?
Oh, Luck. I start Luck because Luck doesn't have the same skill set as RG3. I would start RG3 or Luck
over Rex Grossman, but that's not the person that's going to make the choice. His name is Mike Shanahan, and Mike Shanahan will not start Luck or RG3. I'm telling you that right now.
He started Jay Cutler as a rookie. So
no, he didn't. Not out the gate.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not. You need to check your record, Slim.
I'll check my records. But I'm telling you, Cutler started first year out of Vanderbilt.
No.
But I'll put it this way. For a pocket passer that's going to go play action, Luck will probably be good because you're used to seeing Luck hand the ball off and running and dinking and dunking the ball, not really pushing it downfield too much. He's got a lot of yak with his tight ends and his fullbacks. So I would see him, you know, actually starting as opposed to RG3, who you're going to say, you know what, you're a stallion. You're a stallion, young man, but we got to bring you back a little bit. We got to dull it down just a little bit for you. So I think that would be the case, you know, and – you know, Irsay is trying to stir the pot a little by saying, you know, we're not 100% saying we're going to have Luck. But, you know, a week before the draft, you'll see how that plays out. Because if they don't sign him a week before the draft, like the last first-round picks have been done, let it be the situation where it's Mario Williams and Reggie Bush again. And you don't have a contract in place. Or Sam Bradford. Even though Bradford had his contract, I think he had it done the day before the draft or 2 days before the draft. You might see RG3 in Indianapolis because he gives them a better chance of winning right now, in my opinion, than Luck. Because they're going to a power running game. But that's just my opinion. For the last 20 minutes of the show, let's get into the NCAAs, okay? Let's go to let's talk about Kansas. Excuse me. Let's talk about Kentucky versus Louisville. I got a couple sound bites here, okay? First, we're going to hear from Rick Pitino, and he's going to talk about recruiting. Because, of course, Louisville is in Kentucky, and Kentucky is a state, but they have a big, big rivalry. Calipari and Pitino do. And they're competing for the same athletes in that state. Here's what Pitino has to say about that.
Everybody has a destination, and it's the methods to get to your destination. And they recruit probably the best in the country. And if you're a player that's thinking of going to the NBA right away, Kentucky's going to be on your immediate list.
Translation, if you're a one and done, you go to Kentucky. But if you want to learn something and be a part of something, you go to Louisville. That's what that basically said to me. Now, we've also got a couple sound bites from Calipari talking about this game is strictly business. And, let's hear what Calipari has to say.
The first day we kind of went out a little bit. We didn't really stay out too long. And then after that, it's been business. We're not here to have fun or party or anything like that. We're trying to win a championship.
I apologize. That wasn't Calipari. That was Childs Gilchrist. I apologize. That's what that was, talking about that. Here's Calipari on having Priest as his friends, because I believe something was talked about having to pray for his team.
I have a lot of Priest friends that from going to Mass and different places where I've been, and we met in, I believe it was Puerto Rico, and I was looking for a morning Mass, and he said, I'm going to give one in my room. So we, five of us, huddled in his room, and Father John said Mass and gave communion and all those things.
So he's praying. He's praying, Calipari is. What do you guys think about this game? I mean, it's going to be a very interesting game. It's going to be an up-and-down game. It'll probably be the higher-scoring game of the two. But what do you think about this Kentucky-Louisville game? You got the three-guard, two-forward versus two-guard, two-forward center concept. Mike?
I'm going to have to go with Kentucky.
Why?
I think it's gonna be a hell of a game. I really do. These two teams. In Kentucky, this is a big, humongous rivalry. Huge. They can't wait to get this one on. But I'm going with Kentucky. Now I'm gonna stick with Kentucky, love.
Okay. All right. Black, you want the Wizards to pick that forward. Now, I'm going to tell you, was it number four? He's number four for Kentucky?
Number three.
Yeah, number three. Now, I watched him. I watched him when they played Baylor. I don't like him. I'm going to tell you why. He plays good defense, and he does get boards. But to me, he's very loose, meaning he can't. He brought the ball up court a couple times. I was like, "Oh my God, this dude is just a lumber. He's lumbering down the court. He's a big guy. I still like Thomas out of Kansas. Thomas is a beast, and we're gonna get to him in a minute. But this kid, you put him with Childs Gilchrist. You put him with Davis, and he's an all-star. But you put him on a team that needs help. He's not that focal point. He's just a cog, in my opinion.
Oh, you're not a good evaluator of basketball talent, my friend.
Davis is good, dude. Davis is good, but I don't think Go ahead.
This young man can go, man. This young man can go. Put him in the offense without all those guys, and you're saying putting in work, man. Left-handed, 6'9", 240.
I mean, but let's put it
in the context. He's no Harrison Barnes. Right, let's get that straight. Harrison Barnes is going to be a bust in the league. This young will get it done, man. This young will get it done.
I'm not saying that he won't get it done, but from my money, I think Thomas is the better player. But in the game versus Louisville, how do you see it?
Oh, that's quite naturally, in the words of the master, quite naturally, I have Kentucky. Because I need Kentucky and I need Ohio State to finish off my bracket to rush me into the number one position, my friend.
Forget about the brackets for a second. Forget about the brackets.
Forget about the brackets. Well, my brackets are on the line today. Four different tournaments.
But how do you see this game shaking out? Do you think it's going to be a high-scoring game? You see a lot of fouls? You see
the
tension because of the rivalry?
It's going to be a helter-skelter game, but Louisville has been overachieving all year. They're overachieving stops at this game. I don't see them getting it done.
Okay. In my opinion, Louisville isn't going to win either, but they are a very, very productive team. They're very fast with their three-guard set. I think they're going to try to just outrun Kentucky on
That would be a sad mistake because Kentucky looks to get up and down.
I know.
That would be a sad mistake on Louisville's part.
But Louisville plays a three-guard system, and that leads more to a running and a slashing type of offense. So, I mean, that's what I think. I think Kentucky's going to win. I have Kentucky and Kansas. Unfortunately, I had North Carolina and Kentucky playing for the national championship, but that got killed when Kansas beat them.
Yeah, don't bring up your bracket right now. It has no relevance.
Whatever, dude. What number are you? What number are you?
When you see Kentucky and Ohio State at the end of the day, you tell me what number I'm in.
What number are you right now? What are you right now?
It doesn't matter about right now. I'm above you right now.
No, you ain't. I'm number 11 or 13. I'm 11 and 13.
I know you're bringing up the rear behind Black the Boogie. I know that for sure.
Whatever.
No, that's
whatever, Slim. You ain't winning jack.
And you had two brackets.
Whatever, Slim.
All right. I was one. Don't even two or three. I'm productive with that one bracket, my friend.
I think both
of your brackets are behind me right now.
Well, I'm going to look and see.
Looking at the left butt cheek and the right butt cheek.
Left cheek, right cheek.
All right, let's go to the Ohio State Kansas game. Thad Matta and Bill Self are really good coaches. They're very good coaches. You got the Big Ten versus the Big 12 in this. Ohio State actually is one of those teams that I think they could actually win it all. If they beat Kansas, I'm going to be scared for them to take on Kentucky because they're big on the inside. They have a good point guard. They can shoot the ball. They can play slow. They can play half-court offense as well as run with you. They're a very, very good team. Both Kansas and Ohio have a lot of seniors and juniors on their team, though. So that means the leadership on that team on those teams it should be pretty good. And I want to talk about this kid, Thomas, because he's a D.C. guy. He's a D.C. guy. And Bill Self actually earlier on in the year said he hopes that he's a junior, but he hopes this is the last time the last year he plays at Kansas because of his situation. He really wants him to go to the NBA. Because he has a little niece where the mother died and the father, his stepfather, took the baby girl and now he's pretty much, and his mom is dead and all this other stuff. So it's a really sad story. But Self also said Thomas needed to stay in school. Here's his Bill Self on Thomas.
Thomas wasn't prepared to make a living. I mean, let's call it like it is. He's never had to carry the water. How many guys in the NBA that are ultra successful have never had to be in the game at the end of a game to determine the outcome? I mean, so to me, it wasn't a hard decision. He needed to show everybody and himself, you know, that he was a guy that could make plays to impact the game.
Now, that leads to what Black was saying, that Thomas isn't a better player than the kid in Kentucky. But I believe Thomas is ready to be that impact player just like Blake Griffin, except with a post game. Blake Griffin has to develop his post game, in my opinion, but I think that Thomas is there. But here's Bill Self on the Jayhawks versus the Buckeyes.
Well, he's as good a low post scorer as there is in the country, and he rebounds his position as well as anybody. You know, he brings a lot to the table. We caught a huge break when he didn't play the first time. He's a terrific player. You know, but they're not the same team that we played because they've improved a lot, and I don't think we're the same team they played because we've gotten a little bit better.
They're talking about the number zero for Ohio State, who is their post-up guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now. But Kansas is looking to go into the final game since who's the coach down in North Carolina? I can't remember his name right now. Who's coaching North Carolina?
Roy Williams.
Yeah, Roy Williams was coaching Kansas, and when they took on when Kansas took on I can't remember who Kansas lost. Was it Duke? No, it wasn't Duke. It was Kansas versus man, I can't remember, but it was the first time both of the teams were playing for the national championship, and that team won. Anyway, my thoughts on this game is going to be a big boy battle. It's going to be a big boy battle. It's going to be half-court offense, and it's going to be like a 55-62 or 63 score, because it's going to be a lot of post-up and a lot of moving the ball and taking the clock down. Again, Ohio State scares me because they're such a big team and they can play either way. Kansas is a big team too, but I'm not sure if they can run and gun like the other teams can. But I have Kansas coming out of this game, winning it all, and going to play Kentucky. And we'll talk about that game probably Thursday night. What you got, Black?
Got Ohio State, my friend.
Oh, you got the Buckeyes.
The top story that you tell me about Thomas, it's good, but the college basketball at the end of the day. I'm going to Ohio State, buddy.
But why?
I'm going with Salinger finally breaking through, making an impact. They took an early lump last year. I think Salinger looks to rebound and make it to the finals this year.
Well, they got eliminated in the Sweet 16 last year, so that's part of the motivation. I got that. But I don't know. I don't know. What you think, Mike?
As much as it pains me to agree with the Dallas Cowboy fan.
Come on, man. Do it. Come on, babe.
I'm going to have to go with the Buckeyes.
Why?
That youngin, I think that youngin is a good player. I think he got it.
I'm not saying Salinger isn't a good player, but I don't know, man. I just think Kansas has—they just always have big boys that rebound, always. And them in Michigan State, you can never count them out because they crash the boards. Thomas gets many offensive boards, many. He's an offensive rebound machine. He gets some defensive boards too, but he gets a lot of putbacks, and that's invaluable when you're playing against Ohio State. That you know, that's the same thing. So I can't agree with you guys, but you know, at the end of the day, we'll see who wins, and hopefully I'm right and you're wrong. Hopefully.
at the end of the day, you'll still be pulling up the rear, my friend.
Oh, silence, punk. All right, fellas, we got 5 minutes left in the show. And actually, we're not going to go into overtime, which is pretty good. final predictions. I want you guys to give your final thoughts on this week in sports or whatever it is you got to give. You got a minute, and I'm going to go with Michael first. So, Mike, go.
RG3 in D.C. will successfully destroy the other team that names begins with a D and a C. Yes.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. All right, Black.
Prepare yourself for Kentucky versus Ohio State final. Black the Bookie will reign supreme in all brackets he's involved in this year. And prepare for an NFL draft day shocker with the Washington Redskins select Andrew Luck, quarterback from Stanford.
Whoa. Now, you know, it's not far off, dude. I think the Colts might go ahead and pick RG3 now that they're looking at everything and seeing, you know, what type of team
well,
they had.
He's as good a low post scorer as there is in the country, and he rebounds his position as well as anybody.
Wrong sound,
yes,
but I didn't mean
yes,
to hit that.
Yes, Andrew Luck does rebound as well as anybody in the country.
Hit the wrong button. But I think that that's a possibility. That's a real big possibility, Black. I mean, if Andrew Luck comes to D.C., a lot of people will be happy, but a lot of fans will be upset as well. But we'll see.
That's why you don't move that many picks without getting the number one pick.
Well, a lot of people believe that it's a 1 and 1A. So whoever the 1 is, the second one's going to be the 1A. So, and you're right. You're right. I'm coming off of my Skins are going to go ahead and trade that second pick to get more picks, even though we don't have a second-round pick
that's
this year or a third-round pick. So
you getting up off your fantasy?
I can only hope. I can only hope.
No.
But it is what it is. Hey,
it's
look, I got to start some type of controversy.
We need a quarterback.
I got that.
Controversy's already been here. We don't have a quarterback. We need one.
All right. Well, here's my pardon shot here. Roger Goodell, I believe you're doing an excellent job in trying to restore the good name of the NFL. A lot of folks, including people on this show, feel as though that you're overbearing and overreaching in a lot of your decision makings. But I think you have the right goal in mind, and I hope that the NFL does expand to Europe and come over here to London and all those other things, because your market cannot stay stagnant. The longer your market stays stagnant and does not change with the times, the slower or the quicker it will go extinct. Football is a global sport. Got it? American football is a global sport, but you need to bring it to the other nations around the world that want it and can actually give players and coaches an opportunity outside of the United States. I think it's a wonderful idea.
They do that through the wonderful world of cable. Aren't you watching in London?
Oh, my God. I ain't in London. But I think it's a good
idea. We don't want to see Australia play England in the game of football, man. Football is an American sport.
No, we don't. No,
but
we don't.
American. They're trying to globalize it like the NBA over in China. That stuff doesn't work, man.
It's
a billion-dollar industry. We don't need growth over there. I'm sorry. You want to watch football, you bring your ass back to the States.
Oh, my God. Anyway, let me finish. Can I finish my parting thought? Because y'all just taking over. I appreciate that. Mean losers. Anyway.
I want this.
What you got here is a bunch of people on this show that love doing what we do. We're going to do it next Saturday. Tomorrow on the Master Plan, I'm going to host it. I might talk about this Trevon case. I might talk about that. Because some things have come to light I want to talk about, and I'm going to get into it. Also, I'm going to get into possibly the Andrew Luck and RG3 situation. So we'll talk about that tomorrow in the absence of the master. Vic is going to take over.
You're actually going to talk about Trevon? Really?
Silence. On Tuesdays, Kim is back. So Compassion Dakini will be back. She's going to talk about her trip up Mount Kilimanjaro and all that other stuff. So we'll see what she does and what she talks about on Thursdays. Hopefully, ATM will be back, and he'll be there hosting with Black and Jeff, and they'll do something special. You got any guests coming up this Thursday, Black?
I'm hoping to have my cousin from Baltimore County on, who won the Mega Millions jackpot last night. So I'm working on that for Thursday.
Hey, I'm hoping to get a piece of that Mega Millions. I should have told y'all to buy me a ticket. That's what I should have did, gave y'all the numbers. But anyway, we got that happening on Thursdays. And my cousin with Grown Soul and Real Talk, talk to us. What's happening on your show on Wednesday?
On Wednesday, we're going to continue our discussion on Trayvon Martin. As you all know, it's been 35 days since this gentleman has not been arrested. We're going to continue to talk about that and debate about his whereabouts and will he ever be brought to justice. I personally
I think
he's in Israel.
Why are you saying he, Israel? He's Latin, dude. He's not of Middle Eastern descent.
He's in Israel.
Real talk, Real Talk will pay this bounty. I will find Zimmerman for you, my friend.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Those views are those of Black the Bookie
and McCowboy of Grown Soul and Real Talk.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh my gosh. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this show has been a good one. It's time for me to get off of here and do a little time. My neck is sore. My voice is going away, and I got to rest my neck. The titanium in the neck is kicking my butt. So anyway.
Did you get my HGA shipment yet?
Shut up, you fool. You're such a fool, clown. All right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for the go, so I got to tell you, you've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking Fantasy Sports and Politics.